Good morning, good afternoon, and good evening to all our listeners. This is the Business Day Spotlight, your destination for African business made simple. My name is Mulio Gavaza, and for today, we're just doing a bit of a roundup just around some of the big issues of the week and the coronavirus, which is spreading from Asia to different parts of the world, is making big news and has actually started affecting companies with operations there. And we're going to be exploring how that might have an impact on the South African economy. And then we're also going to be touching just around what's been going on with one of the biggest SOEs in South Africa at the moment, that is South African Airways, because earlier this week it was revealed that the Development Bank of South Africa has given them some funding. And we're going to be talking about whether this is necessary, what does this mean for the fiscus, and whether or not this really was what was intended when this company went under business administration. On the line to help us unpack some of the issues is Y.R. Van der Linde, who is an economist with NKC African Economics. How are you?
I'm fine, and you, Madiba? Thanks for having me.
Thank you so much for joining us. Just to get the ball rolling, what are your thoughts given the fact that SAA has been given funding after the Treasury had actually placed the airline in business rescue last year in December?
Yeah, look, in what was seen as a rather peculiar move, in battle South African Airways, they received a lifeline from the state-owned Development Bank of Southern Africa on Tuesday. When the latter committed 3.5 billion rand in funding to SA with an immediate drawdown of 2 billion rand. So basically, the DBSA is keeping SA in the sky, or should I say, you know, the state is, because what it is doing, you know, is moving money from the one hand to the next. And this has people up in arms. And do I remember, the Treasury announced back in December that it would put SAA into business rescue. This move was widely received with optimism,
yeah.
And the government also pledged 2 billion rand. Now, we found out this week it's 1.5 billion rand more. The initial pledge was what it called post-commencement finance to get the business rescue process off the ground and to enable SAA to continue its operations.
Yeah.
Now, Public Enterprise Minister Pravin Gordhan at the time said, you know, this is an optimal mechanism to restore confidence in SAA and help to restructure and reposition the entity into one that is stronger, more sustainable, and able to grow and attract an equity partner. And, you know, Mr. Gordhan also emphasized that this wasn't simply another bailout, but rather the provision of financial assistance to facilitate a radical restructure of the airline.
Yeah.
So, you know, given that SAA is in such a state of despair, a radical restructuring process is exactly what was needed and still is, you know, in order to ensure financial and operational sustainability. I mean, the company, if you look at it, has not turned a profit since 2011.
Yeah.
Moreover, you know, recent financial statements have revealed that the airline made a cumulative loss of over 10 billion rand over the past 2 years.
Wow.
And, you know, if you look at it over the past 2 years, you know, it adds up. And the outlook for SAA, you know, is bleak. But I feel one of the main things is to understand what this financial bailout means. So, you know, for me, any hope that the business rescue of SAA would turn into anything other than just another government mechanism to provide yet more bailout has now disappeared completely. Because when SAA was placed in business rescue, you know, it signaled a direction in the government's tactics to deal with failed or failing state entities. And that shutting down the airline, you know, was an easy option at the time. Mr. Gordhan did, however, dampen this optimism, as I said, you know, somewhat when he committed the 2 billion rand in government funds. But the fact that DBSA confirmed that it will transfer, you know, that equity bridge facility this week meant that there is nothing to suggest that this is anything but one set in the, as I said, passing state cash to another. Now, the DBSA's mandate is to invest in infrastructure projects in South Africa and the rest of the continent. You know, with the underlying assumption that these projects promote economic development. Now, the Business Rescue Partners practitioners and told local media after the medal was secured that the funding has been secured and the stakeholders, all the parties involved, you know, of the airline, could have comfort that the rescue process was on a sound footing.
Yeah.
Passengers, travel agencies, you know, the airline partners, they can continue to book in air travel on SAA with confidence. But we've recently seen now that the airline has been forced on numerous occasions to cancel and or consolidate flights, either due to low demand or to cut costs. And, you know, this poses the question, how a turnaround can be achieved if no one wants to fly with the national carrier?
No, that's true. But the one question that keeps coming to my mind as you're talking is, should DBSA even be, because just now I think you mentioned what the actual role of the DBSA is, and is it really the DBSA's place to be doing this? Because I would think that with all the problems that South Africa has, they could be spending that money on something else.
You know, SA, if you think what the purpose of it, does it actually still serve? Because it doesn't really provide cheaper flights compared to some of the domestic carriers. And yes, the closure of SAA, you know, means we would surely lose some local flights. And then there are a lot of people employed by the airline and its subsidiaries. I think it's close to 10,000 people. But, you know, as you rightly point out, we have to ask ourselves the question, you know, can South Africa, with its precarious financial position, afford to throw money into a bottomless pit?
Yeah.
How long until the airline comes crawling back in need of more financial assistance?
Yeah.
I mean, 2020 has only just started. I think, you know, you mean to touch on DBSA, you know, what this bailout means. And surely going forward, we have to look at the policy implications this might have. Because it's obvious that the political interference with the business rescue process that began almost as soon as the plan was announced, you know, has reached the inevitable point that there never was a real business rescue plan, if you catch my drift.
Yeah.
Because any notion that SAA, that the SAA initiative would signal a new and more ruthless approach to dealing with SAEs that had no prospect of becoming profitable, was killed off by claims that SAA would not be allowed to fail. Now, the DBSA bailout merely continues a long practice of repeating unsuccessful interventions while hoping for a different outcome.
Yeah.
But I mean, this is more than just an SAA issue, right? So the concern is where and how the next bailout will be conjured up. And for which collapsing SAE? Because with no fundamental shift in policy on the horizon, it just appears that the prospects of any significant economic recovery are going to continue to depend on various summits, for example, you know, where success to date has been questionable. And, you know, it's worth mentioning that in addition to the funds loaned to SAA, DBSA sits with a lot of Eskom debt on its balance sheet. And the fact that the DBSA acted outside of its mandate has people anxious over whether or not this will happen again, or where will it stop? And where is the incentive for these entities, government entities, to become more efficient?
Yeah, actually be better businesses.
Because earlier here, Mr. Ramaphosa stressed that the power utility or parts thereof, for example, are not up for sale, while there's still no word on how the state is going to save Eskom.
Yeah.
And unfortunately, you know, these sort of things seem to apply to a good number of critical issues in our country. You know, weak economic growth, unemployment, those sort of things. So, yeah, for me, what it comes down to is how this in the beginning, the seemingly positive stance towards tackling and addressing SOEs has changed. And now, you know, the government, it just shows us, has time and again showcased its unwillingness to make the hard decisions needed to meaningfully address the country's main challenges.
Yeah.
Like I said, you know, it's weak economic growth, deteriorating fiscal situation,
yeah,
and operational and financial difficulties at numerous SOEs.
Yeah.
And this is going to all implications going forward.
So in terms of the bailout, the money that's been given by DBSA to South African Airways, how does this impact some of the thinking that ratings agencies might have? And are we likely to see or hear more mention of this in the budget speech that's coming up next month?
All three rating agencies have started losing patience with South Africa. Moody's has given us a lot of the government a lot of time to get its house in order, and each rating agency has adopted a negative outlook on its respective rating and signaled that another round of downgrades will be upon us, you know, unless the February 2020 national budget presents a credible plan to stabilize the notable deterioration in the country's fiscal metrics. But there's not much hope of that happening, and we will have to face the consequences, as I've said. Because, look, South Africa's economic fundamentals do not warrant an investment-grade sovereign credit rating. And I believe Moody's will cut its investment-grade rating on South Africa's local currency debt,
yeah,
to sub-investment-grade before the end of March. Unless, of course, you know, the finance minister manages to rabbit out of that. And although, you know, much of the downgrade has already been priced in, considerable uncertainty, you know, still remains about the size of forced disinvestment once South African bonds fall out of the WGBI,
yeah,
World Government Bond Index.
Yeah.
And yeah, we think investors will view South Africa's debt as some of the best junk out there. And, you know, given low yields and inflated asset prices in much of the developed world, we will remain attractive. We are very likely to see a temporary overreaction by the Rand.
Yeah.
And a mild increase in government borrowing costs, but no substantial capital exodus, I would say.
Now, we just want to shift the conversation to what's going on internationally. I think some of the big news of the last week, maybe 2 weeks, at least, you know, for a significant part of January, has been the outbreak of the coronavirus in China. And are we likely to feel the impact of the virus in South Africa, I guess, at least on an economic scale?
Yeah, look, I mean, it's still early days. Yesterday, the World Health Organization declared the Wuhan coronavirus outbreak a global health emergency due to the fact that it could spread to countries that aren't prepared. I think the latest estimates show that at least 9,000 people have been affected by the virus, and
yeah,
200 people have lost their lives, and cases have been reported in 19 other countries.
Yeah.
And, you know, if you just look at the potential impact that the virus can have, you know, it certainly suggests, if we look from, you know, look back to the past, it could be a potentially high impact but short-lived event.
Yeah.
Similar to the 2003 SARS episode.
Yeah.
It poses considerable downside risk to Chinese growth in 2020.
Yeah.
And, China's obviously, you know, one of the major economies in the world, but this depends on the duration and the severity of of the virus, of the outbreak, and whether or not it can be contained. But beyond that, as things currently stand, the impact should begin to fade. That said, I think the consumption and travel across the region will be most affected, especially Asia Pacific, and maybe to a lesser degree, investment and industrial production in the region. And then, you know, some of these factors could certainly manifest in lower demand for commodities going forward, which in turn would push commodity prices downward and subsequently affect resource-rich African countries, like us, for instance. So if we move closer to home, China is South Africa's largest trading partner, and we have certainly felt the impact in our financial markets. But like I said, there's still a great deal of uncertainty. We have seen the exchange rate depreciate over this past week, and we've seen a major global sell-off in equity markets. And it was a similar story closer to home in the beginning of the week.
Yeah.
Now, in terms of the virus possibly reaching our shores, the National Health Department of Health did come out and say the port health authorities have stepped up surveillance and, you know, for all inward travelers from Asia, especially China. And the department also said that measures had been put in place to combat the risk of the virus entering the country. Up to now, no cases had been reported in South Africa or any of the neighboring countries. But like I said, it's early days, and we will continue to follow the matter closely.
I guess as a last point on this, do you think what's happened with the coronavirus, at least you've already highlighted that there was a bit of activity, a bit of a sell-off in the equity markets, and the Rand has come under pressure a little bit given what's going on with its biggest trading partner. Do you think something like this sort of underlines the sort of inherent risk that there is in a globally integrated economy?
Certainly, because what it comes down to is the impact it's going to have, potential impact it will have on global demand. And China is such a big consumer of commodities, and you know, the virus comes at the time with where Chinese tend to go out and travel across the globe for the Lunar New Year.
Yeah.
And we've seen, you know, a lot of airlines actually coming out and say we're suspending travel in the region, and this has a serious impact on you know, some of the macroeconomic variables. We've seen oil prices slide to below crude futures slide below $60 per barrel of Brent, and you can definitely see the impact. You know, equity markets in Asia have come under severe pressure. And we've seen sell-offs, across the spectrum.
Yeah.
And this, like you rightly point out, you know, this is just an effect of the globally integrated economy, and where there's so much uncertainty, and obviously markets very little tolerance for uncertainty.
Yeah.
So yeah, markets are grappling with what to make of this, and trying to figure out whether or not it will at some point hit a crest, and what can how can we proceed further. Oh. I think at the end of the day, you know, they try to make parallels, as I mentioned, with the SARS episode.
Yeah.
And that's probably the best thing to look back towards is that. But other than that, we will have to wait and see.
So we'll have to wait and see. That's us with Vanda Lynn, who is an economist at NKC African Economics. And that second half of the discussion, just talking about the coronavirus and some of the economic impacts that it's had on the, you know, global markets, financial markets and the like, and the possible impact on the South African economy. He's just telling us that early in the week, there was a bit of a sell-off in equity markets. Asian stocks have come under a lot of pressure, and similarly for South Africa, given the fact that China is our biggest trading partner, the rand has come under a bit of pressure given what's going on there. Also highlighting the fact that an event like this sort of underscores what it means to be in a globally integrated economy, because the coronavirus is something that none of us could have predicted, but it's here, it's happening, and it's having all of these ramifications and different consequences around the world, and it's being felt in different ways and spheres. How can people get in touch with you if they possibly want to engage with you on some of these matters?
Yeah, so I'm active on LinkedIn. People can follow me there, JWE-A van der Linde. And happy to engage with you there.
Okay, cool. So you heard it. It's JWE-A and then van der Linde. And he says that you can get in touch with him on LinkedIn if you want to just engage on some of these and other issues of the economy.
This is Mudiwa's Take.
So I think the interesting thing that comes out of the discussion with Yeah is just the fact that the Development Bank of South Africa's funding of South African Airways, it's an interesting development, simply because the market really thought that the government was changing the way it operates, the way that it handles SOEs, you know, with these business rescue practitioners, etc. But it just seems, at least from the outside, at least, like they've just reverted back to their usual way of operating, which is just throwing money at the problem and not really attacking the fundamentals. Because the fundamental question right now is not really how much money does South African Airways need. The fundamental question is, should South African Airways still be a state-owned enterprise? Does South Africa need to have a national carrier? Is it really necessary for South Africans? Is the South African public really benefiting from having a national carrier as much as it would if government was throwing money more at, let's say, the rest of the public transport system, at the infrastructure development projects, making sure that municipalities are running properly, making sure that people are paying Eskom bills, you know, stuff like that. South Africa has a lot of problems, and it really, you know, begs the question of, is this really the time? Is it really the place of the government to have a national carrier? And then the other issue is just the coronavirus. I think we actually mentioned it quite a bit, the fact that global integration, I think global integration, globalization, very good things as far as I'm concerned. But I think it just highlights once again the inherent risk that comes when you are operating in different parts of the world. And when I say different parts of the world, I mean if you're doing trade with different countries, you've got companies operating in different jurisdictions, etc., you sort of build in this other risk. And when China is your biggest trading partner, then anything that happens that side, you know, becomes a problem for the country. And we heard the rand has actually, you know, come under pressure quite a bit. They're shutting down whole cities there, and it's likely to affect what Chinese growth will look like in 2020, which has a big impact on an already slowing global economy, which then further exacerbates South Africa's dire economic growth, because last week's show we're talking about possibly 0.7-0.8% growth. But if your biggest trading partner is affected, even though it's a flash, you know, even if it ends up being a very short-lived situation in China, the ramifications might be felt for the rest of 2020, and that might end up having an impact on South Africa's overall GDP growth for the year. So these are just some of the things that, you know, might take away from the discussion that we just had. So thank you so much. That is Yeoff and Linda, who is an economist with NKC African Economics. So that brings us to the end of today's episode. Remember that you can find our latest podcast on Business Live under the podcast Business Day Spotlight tab. On Twitter, we are #BDSpotlight. And remember that you can review and subscribe for free on Ayano.fm, Spotify, Apple Podcasts, Google Podcasts, Pocket Casts, or wherever you choose to get your pods cast. Thank you so much to our amazing team. Our producer is Paige Emula. So that's been it for today. My name is Mudiwa Gavaza, and this has been the Business Day Spotlight, your destination for African business made simple. Remember that the Business Day Spotlight is a multimedia live production. So for myself and the rest of the team, it is good evening, good afternoon, and good morning.